Welcome to the February 5th, 2019 work session for the Springfield Planning Commission. Take attendance. Looks as if everyone's here, so let's go through the motion. One item is a presentation by Jeff Pascal, Engineering Division Manager for the 2020-2024 Capital Improvement Program.
Thank you, Chair. And the rest of the planning commissioners, some new folks on here since I think I was last here, at least 2 years ago, if not for another topic between then. I am Jeff Pascal. I am the city engineering manager, and bringing to you tonight for review the 2020-2024 CIP, Capital Improvement Program. I was going to go through a plan, PowerPoint tonight, but I decided I'd rather just kind of discuss the major projects we have in the upcoming, in the next couple of years in each kind of section or category of the CIP, and really leave it open for discussion from the Planning Commission to any projects that they may have interest in learning about, or may see needs and any recommendations that they may like to see when I bring it back in a couple of weeks, and maybe information that they'd like me to relay to the City Council when I'm there in March. Just to review the CIP, we update biannually now, which, so I'm in front of you every 2 years. So the first 2 years of the five-year program really dictates the capital budget for the next 2 years. Some minor shifting and moving around as programs change or priorities may shift a little bit, but for the most part, the capital budget over that 2 years does follow the CIP. Some of the big things that we have, so it's obviously from stormwater, transportation, wastewater, buildings and facilities, and then we have some miscellaneous kind of catch-all projects that kind of span all of the programs, and I'll just highlight those. Those are really like updating our plan metrics and maps, and also, I'm trying to recall the other one, oh, city participation in private projects, and so we have funds that we set aside there as developers, as we may require developers to oversize facilities and like things like that, that we can participate in those projects. And those are the two big ones of the miscellaneous. In stormwater, we have over the next couple of years, the big push is since we updated the flood insurance rate maps and also finished the master plan for that channel, which is a channel that runs through kind of the middle of North Springfield and outfalling into the I-5 channel. We have about six projects along there, a lot of culvert upgrades, so getting those improvements done. Moving forward with our channel improvement, we've set aside quite a good deal of funds to update channels, which is just basically restore them to functioning current standards and that sort of thing. And then completing, right now we're in the midst of a stormwater analysis in Glenwood and completing that so that we can have an idea of what to do with stormwater or what our stormwater needs are before any big development comes in Glenwood. The other is the 42nd Street levy. FEMA just recently completed a study for us that identified a bunch of work. The city, I believe we've owned that levy since the 80s, and no real maintenance has occurred on that, and so it doesn't meet current FEMA standards for certification. So it was left out of the most recent mapping that FEMA did along the McKenzie River. And so really identifying what the needs are to bring that to certification and then moving forward with those projects. And then along that same thing, because we also have funds coming through House Bill 2017 for transportation to look at some upgrades some upgrades to 42nd Street along there. We also have a major storm line along there. And so we kind of need to look at what that design needs to be, because right now if there's a major spill on 42nd Street, we have no stop control of stopping any sort of spill from reaching the McKenzie. So one of those things is looking at the head gate and some sort of structure that we can put a gate in, that if there was a spill along that corridor, that truck route, that we can, that our operations crews can go out there and at least isolate it. So that's our stormwater program over the next couple of years. Moving into streets and transportation, obviously with the passage of 2018 street bonds, that's going to be our real focus and push for the next 2 to 3 years to get that $10 million on the street, hopefully beginning this summer. And then also we have identified about $12.2 million in federal and state funds for transportation projects. And then when you add in local match and in-kind services, it totals to about $15 million of projects that we've identified over the next 4 years on the transportation system. So those are anything from filling the gaps project, like sidewalks and that sort of thing, to major projects like the Mill Street reconstruction project. On wastewater, things have slowed down a little bit, but we are still doing work. We still have projects that we need to do to make sure we're maintaining the permit and staying in line with our permit. So we're working on what's our capacity management operations and maintenance program. It's what we moved to after our wet weather program. And so we are currently updating our hydraulic model for the city. That should be done sometime this summer. And from that, we'll start we'll get a contract out and start working on updating our wastewater master plan. The other project, we had some developer interest in the next phase of the Jasper Trunks sewer. So we built the first two phases, which got us to, I measured this out, about 12 to 1,500 feet south and east of Mount Vernon Road. The phase three will take us to basically cross Bob Straub and open up that area. And so we do have some interest, so we put that in the CIP, and we'll be asking the council if they're willing to put forward public dollars to building that infrastructure. The other thing I've put in there is we've had a project in the CIP for a while called local sewer extensions. And what that really is we still have some areas within the city that are annexed but don't have access to sanitary sewer, so they're on septic systems. And every year it seems like we have a handful of septic systems that are failing. And so those folks, if they're within 300 feet of a physically available sewer, have to basically initiate their own project to connect to the sewer, and it can be very costly. So we do have a healthy reserve in the wastewater fund, so I'm also forwarding to council to start funding that, where staff can start identifying these areas within the city that are annexed, don't have access to sewer. We can build those local sewer lines, and then those folks will, when they have to hook up, we'll just pay what we call in lieu of assessment. So they'll pay their fair share of the project, but it's a lot more cost effective for both the city and for those residents if we can go out and do those projects now. And going through the financials, it won't be any detriment to the wastewater program to fund about $500,000 to $1 million a year of identifying and constructing those lines. Buildings and facilities. We had the biggest push for my group is the regional fuel facility. So I don't know how many folks know, we share a fuel facility with the school district, Rainbow Water. I'm not going to get all the partners, but several partners, school district, and there is some work we need to do to bring it within current environmental codes. And so that's, hopefully we'll get that work done this summer. We're close to having the design done and making sure that'll work. And so for my group, that's the big push. The other is we have a pot of money for just general building preservation and that sort of thing. But right now we're going to be in a little bit of a staffing flux because our project manager is leaving to work for the school district over 4J school district. So right now I don't know who's going to manage those projects, and I don't know how we're going to deliver those priorities. So that is kind of the big for the areas, and from that, just wherever the planning commission would like to go in the discussion of the document.
Questions?
Two different things I'll touch on. Number one is being aware, of course, as most of us are, the funding situation for all projects, including street projects, which has been a focus lately. There has been an ongoing project that I didn't see mentioned in the document, although I may have missed it, or it might be titled differently, and that is the project of moving manhole covers up to grade. Mm-hmm. And so is that stalled because of funding, or is that something that the city can still move forward on to finish?
We are working on that. but they are really Bailey manholes, so yes, you're correct. We don't have a specific project called out for that. What you'll see in there is called wastewater repair work, and kind of just a pot of money, a bucket of money that we set aside each year for those kind of minor type repairs. The real and biggest reason that that project stalled is staffing within the engineering group. I had I had our only design tech retire basically a year ago. Took me about 4 or 5 months to get somebody hired into that position and then up to speed, and then we've just had some other priorities. For projects like that, I like to use interns, but I can only get through the program at Oregon State. I only get interns about every 6 months or so. So yes, it has stalled. We have a list from operations that we're working on that we will be putting out here this summer to get completed, mostly around 28th Street and that. Some of the others have been identified. They're in ODOT's right of way, which adds complications to that. And so working through that permitting process with ODOT. Also, some of them are in identified areas where we're coming through and doing overlays. So kind of doing the work twice and trying to identify the most efficient way. But it hasn't fallen out. I just don't have a project specifically noted as manhole repairs, what we really call it, because what typically is happening is the grade rings are failing, and so they get crushed somehow, and then the manhole sinks.
Because they're actually, in some cases, at a point where people that know the streets are swerving around them all the time.
Yeah, I know. I mean, one of the worst that we did get done finally was out there at 28th and Olympic. But more people would swerve into the other lane to avoid the hole. Right. So, yeah, it is on our list. It's a priority for operations, and we are working towards identifying them. We can only get so many out a year, but trying to identify the worst ones.
What percentage of that project do you think is completed up to now?
Well, I don't know a percentage because operations just sends me a list of manholes that are the worst. I haven't asked them for how many manholes, and I don't know that because a lot of it's complaint driven. I mean, some of it's identified by our operations crews or our field crews out in the field just driving around and noting bad manholes. But it's not necessarily something that I have, as we go through and do our street survey, that's in the street survey piece, because that's not, it's usually considered part of a different system. So one of those kind of things that probably gets missed at times.
Because I know City had gotten a good start on that several years ago.
Yeah, so. You know, we did quite a few on 5th and Centennial and 28th Street.
Right.
Make sure we get.
So you had, I know that there was a $40 million deficit in street repair, in the street repair fund, and we have $10 million identified for the bond, and then $15 million identified in projects. But what else is left? Like, what's not? What like has the deficit, but it needs to be fixed, but like can wait a little bit?
Okay, so the way I would characterize it is we really have. So we have work that we let go. We weren't doing maintenance work, and that's what you quote call the deficit. So that's projects that have really fallen into what I would classify Mill Street, where we have reconstruction work to do because we weren't doing our annual preservation projects that, you know, to equate it to painting your house every so many years so that the siding and that is preserved. So what I would say with the $10 million bond, what it's doing is keeping that deficit from falling or growing, because we're able to go out and we've identified some of our highest traveled roadways and get preservation on them in a timely manner. So what we've identified in the CIP, and I'm not trying to not answer your question, it's just for me right now, it's really hard to put a number on it. We had identified before we went out for a bond that we really need to be putting, as a city, with the infrastructure we have, which I believe is around 200 and some miles of paved street, should be spending about anywhere from $3 to $5 million a year just in preservation projects. That's not counting the reconstruction type projects. That's if we just had a comprehensive pavement preservation program. That's what we should be doing in pavement preservation annually. So I would say the bond isn't necessarily addressing the backlog itself of reconstruction needs. It's addressing the fact that that backlog won't grow to creating more reconstruction needs, if that makes sense.
Yes, thank you.
the project like Mill Street and being able to get federal funds to do Mill Street, that will address some of the backlog issues, and then hopefully going forward, we can start identifying funding to get on some of those streets that really have fallen off of the preservation list and into that reconstruction list.
Great, thank you. And I have one follow-up kind of with like finding funds somewhere else. I was flipping through the projects, and I would say I'm probably most familiar with the transportation projects. The one for bike wayfinding and safety improvements, I know that was recently funded by FireMed, the like connecting from the D Street path to downtown. Is that project going to be eliminated from this budget now, or what, is it just going to be changed?
Well, I think there's part of that D Street, there's more to it than just wayfinding. Mm-hmm. There's also some redesign and reconfiguring of the pathway to better make the connection for bicyclists. So I wouldn't say the project's necessarily going away. I've been working with Emma, transportation planner, and we'll probably rewrite the project. And then also there's still other wayfinding projects out there, like Virginia Daisy Bikeway. We're looking at addressing some of the wayfinding as part of projects as they come up.
Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm. One more thing. You've mentioned, as you always do in the introduction to the document, that as funding is identified and plugged into particular projects, projects are eliminated from the list, and then at the same time, there's new projects that are added on. Mm-hmm. Is it possible and easy for you to do to possibly flag new projects that we haven't seen before to distinguish them from the existing projects? So that, because my tendency would be to look at the newer projects and see what's coming on board and already being somewhat familiar with the older projects.
I can definitely put a list if you just like a list in the next packet. I could go through a list off the top of my head, all of the overlay projects that say specifically overlay, like 14th and Centennial and Commercial, and all of the bond list mm-hmm. projects are new this year. What's going to be hard for me, I have the list here of all the transportation projects. I just don't know if they made the same, if they have the same title. But one project is the Virginia Bikeway project, was actually split into three phases now. So we have the initial phase, which we're working on getting out to bid this year, 2019. And then we have two other phases, which are the intersection of Daisy and 42nd Street, a roundabout, and then third and old final phase, which would be the Virginia, in essence Virginia, which would be from 32nd Street to 42nd Street. Mill Street reconstruction is new. One project that moved forward that wasn't new, but that we do have transportation funding for, is the design of the phase two reconstruction of Franklin Boulevard. So basically where the new construction ends to I-5, finishing out that design. A lot of the whole list of transportation, right? But I can, if you would like a list, I could provide that in the next packet, which would flag and just kind of say, here are the new projects that were not in the CIP previously.
The suggestion basically is to make a distinction between the projects we're already aware of and what's coming on board.
One thing, because as I look at this, even for myself, and I see these all the time, this document's very large. A lot of the projects have been here for a long time, unfunded. There's a lot of priorities, and so we were talking about this today. One of the things as I was going through this document this year, that when I come back and future updates, is I'm looking at taking those unfunded and can I represent those differently, and can I basically take the current CIP and show here's what the funded projects are, so then it'd be easier to talk about those new projects and see those new projects that are funded, and somehow maybe in an appendix or something show all of the other projects that are in there waiting for funding, that we're continually look for identifying funding that have been static mm-hmm. for a long time. Because there are a lot of projects, and now suddenly this year I probably added about 15 to 20 because of the bond mm-hmm. and all of the transportation funding that we received, which was kind of mid-cycle of the last CIP update to this CIP update. And so the streets and transportation grew, and almost all of them are in streets and transportation, and I added a few wastewater projects, like pulling forward the Jasper Trunk Sewer Phase 3, and
in the local sewer extension, which was always in there, but actually moving it to a funded category.
Well, you do, though, have identified in, on the document funding status, and I think that's
correct.
In large measure covers the questioning whether there's yes, no, or a certain percentage.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of a better way to represent it to the general public, because the document is kind of large and daunting when you house this many projects, and I'm sorry, the financial page printed out so small, at least on my copy it did, but when somebody looks at it and they go, wow, $160 million, but when they actually see the capital budget and it's only about $13 to $15 million a year, there's a big discrepancy, and that's kind of hard to reconcile, I think, for some folks. And so trying to represent what we can actually fund and what we're going to do versus what is unfunded and kind of the dream projects that are in our master plans that we know that someday we're going to need.
Well, I don't think there's anything that I would have a problem with as far as the layout and the structure that you have on it, because you do have a timeline identifying 2 years out, 3 years out, and whatever. And of course, that's tentative too, because things can change. But I mean, that's the information is there. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Further questions? A couple of general ones. A couple of things are kind of dear to my heart. The first is storm. Environmental quality, and I was wondering in some of the storm projects if there's a chance to have some passive stormwater treatment, ponds, swales, that type of thing included in areas where they would be warranted.
Mm-hmm. Our goal, and that's part of our stormwater management plan, is to that passive stormwater treatment, green treatment, that sort of thing, wherever possible. Mm-hmm. So I would say, and this is kind of how the Stormwater Master Plan was written, it never, if you go back and read our 2008 Stormwater Master Plan, it never really called out, except for a few specific projects like the Milray Stormwater Facility that we just finished, never really called out specific stormwater quality. It just said that each project should include a cost estimate or increase the cost by 25% to add water quality somehow. I would say based on our stormwater management plan, our goal is always to use green infrastructure, swales, ponds, that sort of thing when feasible. And our last resort is always any sort of mechanical type treatment. Mostly because when you do the life cycle analysis, it costs more over time, and it's actually typically our operations crews are not necessarily set up to maintain any sort of filter system or anything like that. So a lot of the mechanical systems we put in are just a swirl technique, not necessarily a filter, something they can just factor out, but then we still need some sort of other treatment to get out some of the other elements that are noted by DEQ that we need to remove.
Okay. And then two other items. I made a presentation at one time here about use of plastics in asphalt for road binder. Mm-hmm. Has there been any investigation into that?
I've read several articles. One of the issues with our area, we would have to get somebody like a Wildish who runs an asphalt plant to gear up and do that. Now, to the other side of things, there still hasn't, I would say this, putting my stormwater quality hat on, there hasn't been enough study done yet either, because what they're finding is there's microplastics that then show up out of the roadway mm-hmm. that are ending up in the stormwater system. So that it's kind of a double-edged sword where mm-hmm. we put a new technology in place, but then we haven't totally investigated the what that means to the rest of the environment. However, our city manager, Gino, had passed along some documents to me. It's being used a lot in Europe.
India, too.
In India. But like I said, when I looked at the plant and what it takes, we would really need an asphalt supplier to jump on board.
Sure.
It's not something that we as the city of Springfield can initiate. It would really take a state level or a federal level to say, you need to start including so much of this type of recycled material.
But the asphalt companies have responded to changes in the past that were initiated by local governments, among which was the use of warm mix asphalt versus mm-hmm. hot mix asphalt. So
yeah.
I kind of think that the asphalt and sand and gravel companies will do what you ask them to do within reason. So
yeah.
I'd like to see some kind of pilot project eventually.
Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing with you. I just think it's going to take us more as a metro area. We'd have to probably be with Eugene and Lane County because we use Lane County Lab as our
sure.
testing. And so it would take a regional approach, not that we shouldn't look at it, or okay. a state approach. And that's really where the warm mix came from, was kind of the state ODOT really pushing it. But we would really need somebody who puts a lot of asphalt down to kind of, because we've looked at some other techniques too. There's a lot, there's some cheaper options for concrete out there and different ways to place concrete. And we've tried to put that in our specs, and it's just, it requires a specialized equipment that the contractors here are just not willing to go out and get.
Okay.
So anyway. And then, but yes, I have done the research and I've looked
great.
At it. It's interesting.
And then the final question, I've asked this to staff earlier, was if we have specific questions, and you know, of course, I've got a long list of specific questions mm-hmm. or comments, would it be best for me to just email you a review
that,
step by step?
That yeah. works for me.
Great. I'll go ahead and prepare that. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank
Any
you.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Ash.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very informative. And at this time, we're set to adjourn the meeting for the work session. And